So, picture this. It is a Friday night, and you are sitting on your couch, seamlessly navigating like four different apps on your phone.
Oh, yeah, we all do it.
Right. You are casting a movie to the television, you are group texting your friends, maybe ordering dinner on another app.
All at the exact same time.
Exactly. You feel like this absolute maestro of the digital age. You are completely in control. But then Monday morning rolls around.
And everything changes.
It really does. You sit down at your desk and someone introduces a new project management software. And suddenly you are staring at the screen like it is some sort of alien artifact.
Right. Your brain just completely freezes up.
Yes, you're clicking things at random, completely terrified that you might accidentally delete the entire company database or something.
It is a jarring drop in competence. And honestly, it is something almost everyone experiences, but we rarely actually examine the mechanics behind it.
No, we don't. We usually just blame ourselves, right?
Yeah, or we assume we're just getting too old to keep up.
Which is incredibly frustrating. But that is exactly why we are doing this deep dive today. We are looking at a fascinating 2026 conceptual paper by Jasmine Bamani from the International Society that Learn Journal.
And the paper is titled Contextual Digital Identity.
Right. And what I love about Bamani's research is that it completely dismantles this idea of being inherently, bad with
It
technology.
really does. It flips the whole script.
It really does. So our mission today is to explore why our digital competence seemingly just evaporates at work. And specifically, we're going to look at why the teachers who educate us sometimes struggle so profoundly to adapt to new digital tools.
Which is such a great lens to view this through.
But to understand this new framework that Bamani proposes, we first have to talk about Mark Prensky. We have to look at the massive psychological shadow he cast over this whole conversation back in 2001.
Oh, absolutely. Prinsky is the origin point for a paradigm that basically shaped educational policy, instructional design, I mean, even human resources for over two decades.
Over 20 years of this one idea just dominating everything.
Right. He introduced this very stark binary concept. He basically divided the world into digital natives and digital immigrants.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because those terms are everywhere.
They really are. So the theory argued that if you were born into the digital age, if you grew up surrounded by screens and the internet, you were a native.
Like it was your homeland.
Exactly. And because of that, you were categorized as a fast information processor, someone who just naturally thrived in interactive multimedia environments.
Right, like your brain was fundamentally wired for parallel processing from birth.
That was the claim, yeah.
The way I've always internalized this model is that it treats technology exactly like a spoken language.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Like if you are born in France, you speak French fluently, it's intuitive, you don't have an accent, it's just part of your neurological development.
Right, it's just natural to you.
But if you move to France in your 30s, you are always going to be translating the language in your head before you speak.
You might memorize the vocabulary perfectly, sure.
Right, but you will always sound a bit awkward. You will always carry that immigrant accent. It makes so much intuitive sense.
Well, it is a highly compelling analogy. And I think that explains why society adopted it so rapidly. It just felt right to a lot of people.
It definitely felt right to me for a long time.
Sure, it relies heavily on these early assumptions about neuroplasticity. The idea that early, intense exposure to digital stimuli actually physically alters the cognitive structures of an entire generation.
Wow, literally changing the brain.
Right. But what's fascinating here is that when researchers actually started testing this empirically, the entire framework just collapsed.
Wait, really? It just collapsed.
Completely. Bamani's paper draws on critical perspectives from researchers like Bennett and colleagues in 2008 and Neil Selwyn in 2009.
And what did they find?
Well, they essentially prove that the digital native is a statistical ghost.
A ghost. Wait, so the entire concept of a teenager naturally being better at technology than a grandparent is just a modern myth?
It is a massive oversimplification, yes. It completely fails to hold up under rigorous observation.
That is wild.
I mean, what Bennett and Selwyn found in their data was that age and generational membership absolutely do not determine cognitive styles or technological competence.
So the year you were born doesn't actually matter.
Not in the way we thought. When they measured actual tech usage, problem-solving skills, and how people processed information across different demographics, the results were really telling.
What did they see?
They found far more variation within a single generation than between different generations.
Wow. Okay, that completely flips the script.
It really does.
Because we just assume this uniform level of skill based on age, right? But the reality is, I mean, you can find a 20-year-old who is deeply anxious and hesitant around a new spreadsheet software.
Oh, absolutely.
While, like, a 60-year-old colleague in the next cubicle is comfortably writing their own Python scripts to automate their workflow.
Exactly. The researchers found no robust evidence that an entire generation possesses a uniform learning preference simply because they grew up with the internet.
So there's this massive intergenerational diversity that we've just been ignoring.
Precisely. But because the native versus immigrant narrative was so catchy, you know, we just kept using it as a diagnostic tool.
We loved the labels too much to let them go.
Right.
Okay, so if we throw out the age-based generational divide, what is actually happening in the brain? Like, when a highly competent person suddenly struggles with a new interface, why does that happen?
Well, Bomani chooses to examine this through a very specific high-stakes lens, which is the paradox of the tech-savvy teacher.
Yes. Let's talk about the teachers, because this is where the discrepancy becomes impossible to ignore, right?
Exactly. In the educational sector, you have these professionals who are incredibly fluent with technology in their everyday lives.
Right. They are navigating complex social media algorithms, using multi-factor authentication on their banking apps, editing videos, managing robust digital social lives without even a second thought.
Exactly. But then, the moment they step into their classroom and are asked to integrate a new learning management system or even just a digital grading rubric,
they freeze.
They completely freeze. They exhibit what Prensky would call digital native behavior on their couch and digital immigrant behavior at their desk.
Which obviously shatters the idea of a fixed biological trait. You can't be born into two different cognitive states.
Right. You can't be a native on Sunday and an immigrant on Monday. But hold on. Let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
A user interface is a user interface, right? If a teacher can navigate a complex banking app, why would a learning management system paralyze them? The mechanics are essentially the exact same.
Are they?
I mean, yeah. You have hamburger menus, swiping mechanics, nested folders, text entry fields. The buttons operate on the exact same logic.
Well, from a purely technical standpoint, yes, you are correct. A button is a button. But that logic isolates the technology from the psychology of the user. Okay, so the psychology changes.
Right. And Bomani answers this discrepancy by introducing the concept of contextual digital identity.
Contextual digital identity. Okay, I like the sound of that.
The core thesis here is that your digital competence is not some static trait that lives permanently inside your brain.
So it's not a fixed level of tech savviness.
No, not at all. It is a dynamic, fluid state that is constantly being reconstructed by the environment you are currently operating in.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this is huge. I am not just one level of tech savvy. My identity shifts.
Continually. Bomani identifies three interacting pillars that determine your digital identity at any given moment.
All right, what is the first pillar?
The first is the usage context. Where are you and what are the stakes of that specific environment?
The stakes. Okay, that makes sense.
Consider the difference between a social context, like casually scrolling a video feed, and a pedagogical context, like officially submitting student grades.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the pressure is totally different.
Exactly. On a video app, if you swipe the wrong way, what happens? A video just restarts.
Yeah.
The consequences are literally zero.
So your brain is relaxed. You aren't worried about making a mistake.
Right. But in a learning management system, a wrong click might delete a student's entire semester of work.
Oh, that is terrifying.
The stakes instantly alter your cognitive processing.
The environment dictates the fear of failure.
Exactly.
And I imagine that leads right into internal psychology, which has to be the second pillar.
It is. The second pillar involves individual factors, and it heavily focuses on domain-specific self-efficacy.
Domain-specific self-efficacy. So not just overall confidence, but confidence in that exact situation.
Precisely. Self-efficacy isn't general. It's your belief in your ability to execute a specific task in a specific scenario.
So why do I have so much self-efficacy on, say, Instagram, but zero on my company's new HR portal?
Because you have massive self-efficacy on a social app due to a deep historical feedback loop of successful interactions. You've used apps like it 1,000 times without ruining your life.
Right. I've posted a photo successfully 1,000,000 times.
But when a new work software is introduced, that historical feedback loop just doesn't exist yet. The user interface might look similar. A button is still a button, but your domain-specific confidence is zero.
And that triggers the hesitation.
Exactly.
Man, I can feel my own blood pressure rising just thinking about a mandated software rollout at an office.
It's universally stressful.
It really is. Okay, so we have the context and the stakes as pillar one. We have our internal self-efficacy based on past successes as pillar two. What is the final pillar?
The third pillar is the perceived purpose. This dictates the underlying mechanism of your motivation.
Why are you actually interacting with this interface in the first place?
Right. If you are downloading a new app to, let's say, track your own marathon training, your motivation is intrinsic. You actually want the data.
I chose to do this. I'm invested.
And when motivation is intrinsic, the brain adopts a playful, exploratory posture. You click around just to see what happens.
Which is the optimal state for rapid learning, isn't it? Just clicking to see what a button does?
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
But think about the opposite scenario. What if I'm opening an app because HR sent an email saying everyone has to log their hours in a new portal by 5 p.m. on Friday?
Oh, I hate that. The motivation is entirely extrinsic. Honestly, I resent the interface before the page even finishes loading.
Exactly. And when a tool is perceived merely as an external professional obligation or a mandate, the brain treats it as a chore or even a threat to your current productivity.
So that exploratory behavior we just talked about, it completely plummets.
It vanishes. You absolutely do not click around to see what happens.
No, I just want to get in and get out without breaking anything.
Right. You adopt highly cautious, limited usage patterns. You are seeking only to learn the bare minimum required to complete the task without triggering an error.
Wow. So when you combine those three pillars, the high stakes context, the sudden drop in domain-specific self-efficacy, and an extrinsic mandated purpose, the result is completely transformative.
It fundamentally changes how your brain approaches the screen.
You essentially possess a hybrid digital identity. You are a native on Sunday afternoon and a cautious, hesitant immigrant during a staff meeting on Monday morning.
Your identity shifted because the environmental variables shifted around you.
Here is where it gets really interesting, though. Bahmani takes this mechanism and applies it directly to the classroom.
Right. She coins a term that finally gives educators a real framework for their struggles. She calls it pedagogical digital immigration.
Pedagogical digital immigration. I love that term.
The pedagogical context acts as a severe psychological boundary. It completely reconfigures a person's competence.
You know, it's like knowing how to cook a phenomenal meal for yourself in your home kitchen.
Oh, I like where this is going.
Think about it. At home, you're comfortable. You know where all the spices are. You can improvise. Maybe you're listening to music.
You are relaxed. You are a culinary native.
Exactly. But then suddenly, you are pulled out of your house and dropped into a high-stakes, Michelin-star commercial kitchen. Right.
Yeah.
It's the middle of the dinner rush. You are told to manage a staff of 30 sous chefs, maintain perfect portion control on every single plate, and satisfy severe food critics waiting out in the dining room.
Your stress levels are through the roof.
But here's the thing. You still know exactly how to chop an onion.
Right.
The physical mechanics of using a chef's knife haven't left your brain, but the context completely paralyzes you. You're going to freeze, you're going to move slowly, and you are going to second guess every single chop.
Because you've instantly become a culinary immigrant.
Yes.
That is a perfect analogy, because in that commercial kitchen, your cognitive load is entirely maxed out.
You aren't even looking at the knife or the onion anymore.
No, your brain is actively trying to process the screaming tickets, the timing of the ovens, and the chaotic movement of the staff around you.
And that is exactly what happens to a teacher's working memory in a classroom.
Precisely. The cognitive load of managing 30 energetic students, maintaining classroom discipline, and aligning a lesson to strict curriculum standards.
Yeah.
It requires immense processing power.
There is literally no cognitive bandwidth left over to figure out a new drop-down menu on a tablet.
None at all. When you introduce a new digital tool into that environment, you aren't just asking a teacher to use a touchscreen.
What are you asking them to do?
You are asking them to fundamentally alter their pedagogy while maintaining absolute control over a highly volatile environment.
That is a huge ask.
It is, and that sheer complexity forces the brain to default to traditional, safe approaches.
So a highly digitally competent person will suddenly exhibit immigrant-like hesitation.
Not because they forgot how a touchscreen works.
Right, but as a deeply rational, protective response to an overwhelming context.
Exactly. It's a survival mechanism, not a lack of skill.
And this theory gets stress tested in the paper using the ultimate modern disruptor, which we have to talk about. artificial intelligence.
Oh yes, the AI integration. Bomani brings in a fascinating 2025 study by Stammers regarding AI-enhanced teaching environments.
Because if the old digital native myth were true, a 22-year-old teacher who grew up with advanced algorithms should absolutely crush AI integration in the classroom, right?
They should be flawless at it.
And the veteran teachers, the 50 or 60-year-olds, should be completely left behind.
But Stammer's research reveals the exact opposite.
Really? The young teachers don't dominate.
No, they don't. And it highlights the profound difference between technical self-efficacy and pedagogical self-efficacy.
Okay, walk me through that.
Well, a young teacher fresh out of college might have incredibly high technical self-efficacy. They could open ChatGPT, write a complex prompt, and generate a beautifully formatted lesson plan in, like, 5 seconds.
Right. They are completely comfortable with the interface. They know how to talk to the machine.
But generating the output is only the first step.
Exactly the problem. Generating the text is easy now.
Right. They generate the lesson plan quickly, but they often lack the deep pedagogical knowledge to actually evaluate it.
Ah. So they don't know if the machine's output is actually good for the students.
Precisely. They don't know how to properly scaffold the AI's information for a student with a specific learning disability, or how to align that generated assessment with specific cognitive developmental stages.
So their technology use is technically fast, but pedagogically shallow.
Yes, and because of that, it often completely fails in the actual classroom execution.
Okay, so flip it. What happens with a veteran teacher?
Meanwhile, a 50-year-old veteran teacher, who is an absolute master of pedagogy, might display massive initial hesitation.
Because they're in the high-stakes environment.
Right. They might stare at the AI prompt box for a week before typing anything. They are displaying that classic immigrant caution because they fear the disruption to their established, successful workflow.
But once they finally cross that threshold,
once they adopt the tool, they have the contextual mastery to use it profoundly.
Because they know teaching.
Exactly. They know exactly what to ask the AI to generate. They can instantly spot the flaws in its output, and they know precisely how to adapt that output to differentiate reading levels for specific students.
The technical barrier is tiny compared to the pedagogical barrier.
Yes.
The 22-year-old knows how to click, but the veteran knows how to teach. And knowing how to teach is what actually makes the technology effective in that specific context.
Which proves conclusively that the primary barrier to technology integration in complex environments isn't age.
And it isn't a lack of technical fluency either.
No, it is the complex misalignment between the new technology and the intense demands of the specific environment.
So what does this all mean? Like, what are the broader implications here? If you are listening to this deep dive on your commute to an office, or maybe you're managing a team in a corporate environment, why should you care about a paper on teacher technology use?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, Bomani's paper challenges every single industry to permanently drop generational deficit labels.
You mean like writing off an older colleague as being bad with computers?
Exactly. Or assuming a young hire will naturally understand a complex enterprise software just because they are 23. It is actively harmful.
It's a structural cop-out.
It really is. It allows companies to blame the individual user instead of examining the environment they are forcing that user to operate within.
Right, because it's so much easier for a company leadership team to say, well, the older staff just can't keep up with the times.
Much easier than admitting fault.
Exactly. Rather than admitting, wow, our software rollout was incredibly disruptive, we added massive cognitive load to their daily workflow, and we provided absolutely zero context on why this tool actually benefits them.
And that realization requires a fundamental dismantling of how we approach training and onboarding.
So what does Bomani recommend we do instead?
According to her research, we have to stop offering generic, contextless tech skills workshops.
Oh, I hate those. Sitting 50 employees in a freezing conference room.
Projecting a software dashboard onto a screen.
And just showing them which specific buttons to click to save a file. It is practically useless.
It is patronizing, and it completely fails to address the psychological friction. Here is the menu. Click export. You aren't teaching them anything about the stakes or the purpose.
You are ignoring the three pillars of their digital identity we just talked about.
Exactly. Effective training must focus on context-sensitive capacity building. In the corporate world, or the educational world, you don't teach the tool in a vacuum.
You have to teach how the tool solves a highly specific, frustrating problem that the user already has.
Yes, you have to shift that perceived purpose we discussed earlier.
Because if the only reason they are using the tool is because a district manager mandated it, their brain will remain in a resistant, extrinsic state.
They will fight it every step of the way. But if you can show them how the software automates a task they already hate doing.
Oh, suddenly the motivation becomes intrinsic. I want to learn this because it helps me.
And when that happens, the user transforms. Their digital identity shifts from a cautious immigrant to an exploratory native, all because you lowered the cognitive stakes and aligned the technology with a meaningful goal.
They will literally start clicking around and figuring out the interface on their own.
Precisely.
Man, this has been a massive paradigm shift. We started by tearing down Mark Prensky's 2001 myth of digital natives and digital immigrants.
Recognizing that the idea of technology acting like a hardwired native language is a biological illusion. It's just not supported by empirical science.
Right. And then we explored the paradox of the highly fluent individual who suddenly freezes when a user interface is placed inside a high-stakes environment.
Uncovering the mechanics of Bomani's contextual digital identity.
Realizing that we are fluid, hybrid operators, our competence scales up and down based on the usage context, our domain-specific self-efficacy, and whether our motivation is internally driven or externally forced.
And we learned that pedagogical digital immigration, or even corporate digital immigration, is a highly rational, protective response to an overwhelming cognitive load.
It is not a deficit of age. Which brings us to a final, slightly mind-bending thought to leave you with.
Oh, let's hear it.
We've established that our digital competence fluctuates wildly based on distinct contexts, right? The relaxed environment of a living room versus the high-stakes environment of a classroom or an office.
Right. The boundaries between those physical environments were currently what define the shifts in our digital identity.
But look at where technology is heading in the near future. We are rapidly approaching a massive saturation of spatial computing, augmented reality glasses, and ubiquitous always-on AI agents. Yeah. And these technologies are explicitly designed to completely dissolve boundaries. They overlay your social messages, your personal entertainment, and your professional data into one constant, overlapping digital stream projected right over your physical reality.
So the distinct separation between the home kitchen and the commercial kitchen is about to vanish.
Exactly. When the distinct context completely disappears into a single augmented layer, what happens to our contextual digital identity?
That is a wild thought.
Will our brains be forced to constantly cycle through native and immigrant states moment by moment, depending on which floating window we are looking at?
Or will the sheer lack of environmental boundaries force human psychology to adapt once again?
Merging these fragments into an entirely new, unified digital identity we haven't even named yet. It's something to think about the next time you feel like a maestro on your phone and an absolute novice at your desk.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the labels the world tries to stick on your intelligence and adaptability, and remember that sometimes it's not you, it's just the context. We'll see you next time.